Atipatao eramani sikkhapadang samadiyami Adinadana eramani sikkhapadang samadiyami Kamesu micacara eramani sikkhapadang samadiyami Musawada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami Suramiraya majapamadatana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Now we will chant the Padipa Puja, offering of likes. Ganna sarapaditena Dipena tamadang sina Tiloka dipang sambudang Pujayami tamonudang Ganna sambara yutena Dopena hang sugang hina Pujaye pujaniyang tang Puja bajana mutemang Vanna ganda guno petang etang kusuma santatin pujayami monindasa siri pada sarorohe pujemi buddhang kusumena nena punnena matena ca hotu mokang Upang milayati yata idang me Kayo tata yati vinasabhavang Adivasetu no bante Paniyang parikapitang Anukampang upadaya Patigan hatu mutamang Adivasetu no bante Pale parikapitang Anukampang upadaya Patigan hamutamang Adivasetu no bante Bojanang parikapitang Anukampang upadaya Patigan hatu mutamang. Now we are chanting the puja aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all this puja offering. Significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which we are offering to the Blessed One who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami and the fruit of our karma so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate Sila, Samadhi and Panya leading to ultimate wisdom on free Nibbana. Making of overall aspiration. By the power of all these merits born of these offerings, may our spiritual faculties of Sada, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers. sharing and transfer merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Triple Gem. Huh? Bedang Pujay. Damang Pujemi Sanghang Pujemi. Okay, you all can be seated. Eh? Then we can have all half an hour of quiet, silent meditation. Eh? We are off the light. Then you all can start your meditation. Eh? I will ring the bell after about 30 minutes. Yeah.
Thank you.
sweat. And now you can slowly, mindfully come out of the meditation. For those who still want to meditate, you can continue. Eh? Let us turn to page 6. Eh? Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good doctrine of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samanta chakavalesu atra gacchantu devata saddhammang munirajas sunantu sakamokkhadang Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta. Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta. Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta. Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo atassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo atassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Ittipiso bhagava arahang sammasambuddho. Vija charana sampanno sugato lokavido anotaro purisa dhammasarati satta deva manusanang buddho bhagavati kato bhagavati Tadamo sanditiko akaliko ehipaseko opanayiko pachatang veditabo venohiti supatipanno bhagavato savakasango Ujupatipanno bhagavato savakasango Nyayapatipanno bhagavato savakasango Samichipatipanno bhagavato savakasango Yadidang chattari purisa yukani Atta purisa pugala Esa bhagavato savaka sango Ahuneyo pahuneyo Dakeneyo anjali karaneyo Anuttarang punyaketang lokasati sadhu 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 kita pay respect Tripa Jama. Badang pujemi. Damang pujemi. Sanghang pujemi. Okay, you all can be seated. Eh? Tonight we will continue from where we stop. 69, turn the page 69. Meeting the five ascetic. So last week we actually went to chapter 6, I think. We were at page 74, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the first discourse of the Buddha immediately after his enlightenment. Then we had a good discussion, but we haven't gone through the book, so I will go through the book. Meeting the five ascetic, page 69. The five ascetic who saw him coming from afar decided not to pay him due respect, as they misconstrued his discontinuance of rigid ascetic practices, which proved absolutely futile during his struggle for enlightenment. So that one, I think, Sister Yun Chan shared with us. Then they remarked, "Friends, this ascetic Gautama is coming. He is luxurious. He has given up striving and has turned into a life of abundance. He should not be greeted and waited upon. His bow and rope should not be taken. Nevertheless, a seat should be prepared. If he wishes, let him sit down." So that was the attitude of the five ascetic. Earlier on, this five ascetic, they have great faith in the Buddha to be, because they already predicted that he will renounce the world. Four of them predict he will either be a universal monarch or a universal teacher. But the last one, Kondanya, was so sure, he said 100% the prince will become a universal teacher. But when they saw Sakyamuni Buddha decide to give up the austere practice, which we call a lot of self-mortification. So when he decided to give up that austere practice of eating very little, enduring, they thought he has given up striving. Then he decided to eat again, accept offering and food from people again. So that was the condition behind why the five ascetic left him. Then when they saw him again, after he became enlightened, he was looking for them to share with them the profound, beautiful Dhamma. But they misconstrued what he did as something very negative. They perceived him with negativity. They thought he is no longer striving. And because of that, they even have that type of negative thought. Not to respect him, not to serve him, then not to even carry his pole or rope. Nevertheless, they said, at least we keep a seat for him. If he wants to sit down and talk to us, let him do it. So that was the perception that they have. Then what happened was, however, as the Buddha continued to draw near, his august personality was such that they were compelled to receive him with due honor, because the Buddha looked different. Then one came forward and took his bow and rope. Another prepared a seat, and yet another kept water for his feet. Nevertheless, they addressed him by name and call him friend, Avuso, a form of address applied generally to junior or equal. So that shows how these five ascetic perceive him. So they no longer treat him with like respect like before. Address him as their teacher or whatever. At this, the Buddha addressed them thus: "Do not, O bhikkhu, address the Tathagata by name or by the title abuso. An exalted one, O bhikkhu, is the Tathagata. A fully enlightened one is he. Give ear, O bhikkhu. Deathlessness, amata, has been realized. I shall instruct and teach the Dhamma. You act according to my instruction. You will, before long, realize your own intuitive wisdom and live. Attaining in this life itself the supreme consummation of the holy life, for the sake of which sons of noble families rightly leave the household for the homeless life. So the renunciation all, for it to be worthwhile, the Buddha said, your sole purpose is to realize this enlightenment. And now that he is the supreme, fully enlightened one, Sammasambuddha, he has the Dhamma, and he can pronounce it or proclaim it to the five ascetic, and they can realize the supreme consummation of the holy life, means realize full and not full, realize enlightenment, arahantship, and beyond. Thereupon the five ascetic replied, by that mini demeanor of yours, Avuso Gotama, again they call him by Avuso and the name, by that discipline, by those painful austerity, you did not attain to any superhuman perfect knowledge and insight worthy of an Arya. How were you when you had become luxurious, having given up striving and have turned into a life of abundance, gain any such superhuman specific knowledge and insight worthy of an Arya? In explanation, the Buddha said, the Tathagata, O bhikkhu, is not luxurious, has not given up striving, and has not turned into a life of abundance. An exalted one is the Tathagata. A fully enlightened one is he. Give ear means listen attentively. It's just like in the Roman time, Julius Caesar, after he passed away, I think he got one cousin or what, forgot the name, you can't remember. Rome's and countrymen, lend me your ears. Oh, so polite, ask them to lend him his ear. Then he started off very well. I came here not to praise Caesar, so that these people will listen to him. Then after that, he unfold all the scheme that these people plot against Julius Caesar. Okay, so similarly here, he said, he used another word, but quite similar. He used this word, give ear. Give ear means listen attentively. O bhikkhu, deathlessness has been attained. I shall instruct and teach the Dhamma. You act according to my instruction. You will become long realized. Sorry, you will before long realize by your own intuitive wisdom the life attaining, and live attaining in this life itself the supreme consummate or consummation of the holy life, for the sake of which son of noble family rightly leave the household for the homelessness. Then for the second time, the prejudiced ascetic expressed their disappointment in the same manner. Then for the second time, the Buddha reassured them of his attainment to enlightenment. When the abstinent ascetic refused to believe him, expressing their view for the third time, the Buddha questioned them thus. For the third time, he has to reprimand them already. He has to really be very stern and reply. So he said, do you know, O bhikkhu, of an occasion when I ever spoke to you thus before? Nay, indeed, Lord. The Buddha repeated for the third time that he had attained enlightenment and that they also could realize the truth if they would act according to his instruction. Then it was indeed a frank utterance issuing from the sacred lips of the Buddha. The cultured ascetic, though abstinent, in their views, were then fully convinced of the great achievement of the Buddha and of his competence to act as their moral guide and teacher. They believed his word and sat in silence to listen to his noble teaching. Two of the ascetics the Buddha instructed, while three went out for arms round. So this one Yun Chan has gone through with us. With what the three ascetics brought from the arms round, the six maintained themselves. There three of the ascetics he instructed, while the two ascetics went out for arms. With that, the two brought, with whatever the two brought back, the six sustained themselves. So that's how they get their arms food. And those five ascetics, thus admonished and instructed by the Buddha, being themselves subject to birth, decay, death, sorrow, and passion, realize the real nature of life and seek out the birthless, decayless, diseaseless, deathless, sorrowless, passionless, incomparable supreme peace, Nibbana. Attain the incomparable security, Nibbana, which is free from birth, decay, old age, sickness, and death, sorrow and lamentation, and all passion. The knowledge arose in them that their deliverance was unshakable, that it was their last birth, and that there will be no more of this state again. Then under the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, which deals with the Four Noble Truths, was the first discourse delivered by the Buddha to them. Hearing it, Kondanya the eldest attained the first stage of sainthood. After receiving further instruction, the other four received also the first stage of sainthood, Sotapatti. Later, then on hearing the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, which deals with the non-self or soullessness, all the five ascetics or follower of the Buddha earlier on became arahants, attained arahantship, the final stage of sainthood. Then the next paragraph is about the first five disciples. Since these five become arahant, they were admitted. The five learned monks who thus attained arahantship and became the Buddha's first disciple were Kondanya, Vidaya, Vipa, Mahanama, and Asaji of the Brahmin clan. Kondanya was the youngest and the cleverest or the smartest of the eight Brahmin who were summoned by King Suddhodana to name the infant prince. The other four were the son of those older Brahmins. All these five retired to the forest as ascetic in anticipation of the Bodhisattva while he was enduring to attain Buddhahood. When he gave up his useless penance and severe austerity and began to nourish the body sparingly to regain his lost strength, these favorite followers, disappointed at his change of method, deserted him and went to Isipatana. Soon after their departure, the Bodhisattva attained Buddhahood. The Venerable Kondanya became the first Arahant and the most senior member of the Sangha. It was Asaji, one of the five, who converted the great Sariputta, the great chief disciple of the Buddha. So that is chapter 5. So we finish. Anybody got anything to add or question regarding chapter 5? How he gained enlightenment and met up with the five ascetics. Anybody? Don't have? Then we continue chapter 6. Chapter 6 is on the first sermon, Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. The best of path is the Noble Eightfold Path. The best of truth are the Four Noble Truths. Non-attachment is the best state. the best of the bipeds is the seeing one. Yeah. Bipeds means not a two-footed. It's within the human realm, which is the two-footed. They have the perfection of wisdom and virtue. That's why doubly perfect the bipeds. Yeah? With the doubly perfect enlightenment and virtue. So, the seeing one is the Sammasambuddha, full enlightenment. Then we go on to the introduction. Ancient India was noted for distinguished philosophers and religious teachers who held diverse views with regards to life and its goal. Brahmajala Sutta of the Digha Nikaya. Digha Nikaya is a longer discourse, mentions 62 various types of philosophical theories that prevail in the time of the Buddha. These are the 62 types of wrong views. One extreme view that was diametrically opposite to all current religious belief was the nihilistic teaching of the materialists, who were also termed the Chavakas after the name of the founder. According to ancient materialism, which in Pali and Sanskrit was known as the Lokayata, man is annihilated after death, leaving behind him whatever force generated by him. In their opinion, death is the end of everything. This present world alone is real. Eat, drink, and be merry, for death comes to all, appear to be the ideal of their system. Virtue, they say, is a delusion, and enjoyment is the only reality. What do you think of this view? We should discuss this. In the ancient day, or olden days, they have this view. They believe everything ends at death. So, to them, it is a delusion to keep virtue, to be a good person, to be a gentleman, to strive and all those things. Then, enjoyment to them is the only reality. Then, according to them, religion is a foolish aberration, a mental disease. There was a distrust of everything good, high, pure, and compassionate. Their theory stands for sensualism and selfishness and the gross affirmation of the loud will. There is no need to control passion and instinct, since they are nature's legacy to man. See, they can have this type of view. What is your view on all this? Yeah? Anybody? Don't have, then we go on. Another extreme view was that emancipation was possible only by leading a life of strict asceticism. This was purely a religious doctrine, firmly held by the ascetic of the highest order. The five monks that attended to the Bodhisattva during his struggle for enlightenment tenaciously adhere to this belief. In accordance with this view, the Buddha took before his enlightenment, subject himself to all the forms of austerity. After an extraordinary struggle for 6 years, he realized the utter futility of self-mortification. Consequently, he changed his unsuccessful hard course and adopt a middle way. His favorite disciple thus lost confidence in him and deserted him, saying, "The ascetic Gotama has become luxurious, has ceased from striving, has returned to a life of comfort. Their unexpected desertion was definitely a material loss to him, as they ministered to all." his needs. So since they were attending to his needs, but after they left him, he has to do everything himself. Nevertheless, he was not discouraged. The iron-willed Bodhisattva must have probably felt happy for being left alone with unabated enthusiasm and with restored energy. He persistently strived until he attained full enlightenment, which is the object of his going forth. Precisely 2 months after his enlightenment, on the Asaha, full moon day, the Buddha delivered his first sermon to the 5 ascetics that attended on him. So this is how the first sermon begins, the first discourse of the Buddha. Dhammacakkappavattana is the name given to this long discourse of the Buddha. It is frequently represented as meaning the kingdom of truth, the kingdom of righteousness, the wheel of truth. According to the commentators, Dhamma here means wisdom or knowledge, and Chakra means founding the establishment. Dhammacakka therefore means the founding of establishment of wisdom. Dhammacakra Pavattana means the exposition of the establishment of wisdom. Dhamma may also be interpreted as truth, and chakra as a wheel. So Dhammacakka Pavattana would therefore mean the turning or the establishment of the wheel of truth. Yeah. But there is another meaning for the wheel. Normally, we call it the wheel of life, samsara. So this wheel of life is typically referred to as samsara, means birth and death, unending birth and death. So this teaching, when is understood, will give rise to the wisdom that can allow the cultivator to liberate their mind and break free from the wheel of life. Then the turning of the Dhamma wheel is another symbol of the establishment of his teaching. That's how the Buddha Sasana come about, the dispensation of the Buddha. So the first turning of the Dhamma wheel is the turning that gave rise to the teaching. So the meaning are both equally applicable. In this most important discourse, the Buddha expounded the middle path, which he himself discovered and which forms the essence of his new teaching. He opened the discourse by exalting the 5 ascetics who believe in strict asceticism to avoid the 2 extremes of self-indulgence and self-mortification, as both do not lead to perfect peace and enlightenment. The former retards one's spiritual progress. The latter weakens one's intellect. He criticized both views as he realized by personal experience their futility and enunciated the most practical, rational, and beneficial way, which alone leads to perfect purification and absolute deliverance. This discourse was expounded by the Buddha while he was residing at the deer park in Isipathana near Benares. I think some of you who went to India, you must have visited this place. The intellectual 5 monks who were closely associated with the Buddha for 6 years were the only human beings that were present to hear the first sermon. Books state that many individual beings such as devas and brahmas also took advantage of the golden opportunity of listening to the first sermon, as Buddhists believe in the existence of the realm other than this world, inhabited by beings with subtle bodies imperceptible to the physical eye. Possibly, many devas and brahmas were also present on this great occasion. Nevertheless, It is clear that the Buddha was directly addressing the five ascetics, and the discourse was intended mainly for them. Then, as per the sutta, the Buddha mentioned all the rhymes, the devas are there. That's why if you have read the Dhamma Cakkappavattana Sutta, you will know. From rhyme to rhyme, the Buddha described how they rejoice and all those things. Then at the outset, the Buddha cautioned them to avoid the two extremes. His actual word were, there are two extremes, or called anta in Pali, which should not be resorted to by a recluse or a cultivator. Special emphasis was laid on the two term anta, which means end or extreme, and pabajita, which means one who has renounced the world. One extreme, in the Buddha's own word, was the constant attachment to sensual pleasure. So this is sensual indulgence. If you indulge in your senses, then that is one extreme that will not bring forth the condition for enlightenment, for spiritual understanding to arise. In Pali, it's called Kama Sukha Sukhali. How to pronounce this one? Kama Sukha Likano Yoga. Okay. The Buddha described this extreme as very, very base, vulgar, worldly, ignoble, and profitless. Because this is enjoying yourself, sensual indulgence. This should not be misunderstood to mean that the Buddha expects all his followers to give up materialistic pleasure and retire to the forest without enjoying this life. The Buddha was not so narrow-minded. So this one is, I think, the views and opinion of the author, Narada. Whatever the deluded sensualist may feel about it, to the dispassionate thinker, the enjoyment of the sensual pleasure is distinctly short-lived, never completely satisfying, and result in unpleasant reaction. Speaking of worldly happiness, the Buddha said that the acquisition of wealth and enjoyment of possession are two sources of pleasure for a lay person. An understanding recluse would not, however, seek delight in the pursuit of fleeting pleasure. To the surprise of the average man, he might shun them. What constitutes pleasure to the former is a source of alarm to the latter, to whom renunciation alone is pleasure. The other extreme is the constant addiction to self-mortification, or in Pali called Atta Kilamantara Tami Yoga, Tanu Yoga. Commenting on this extreme, which is not practiced by the ordinary man, the Buddha remarked that it is painful, ignoble, and profitless, unlike the first extreme. This is not described as base, worldly, and vulgar. The selection of the three term is very striking. As a rule, it is the sincere recluse who has renounced his attachment to sensual pleasure that resorts to the painful method, mainly with the object of gaining his deliverance from the ills of life. The Buddha who has had painful experience of this profitless cause described it as useless, not helpful. It only multiplies suffering instead of diminishing it. The Buddha and Arahants are described as Arya, meaning noble ones. Anarya are ignoble, may therefore be construed as non-characteristics of the Buddha and Arahant, who are free from passion. Etta means the ultimate good, which for a Buddhist is Nibbana, the complete emancipation from suffering. Therefore, Anatta Samhita may be construed as non-conducive to ultimate good. The Buddha at first cleared the issue and removed the false notion of his hearer. When their troubled mind became pliable and receptive, the Buddha relayed his personal experience with regards to these two extremes. The Buddha said, "He, the Tathagata, realizing the error of both these extremes, follow a middle path, the new path or way to discover by himself." The Buddha termed his new system Majjhima Patipada. Patipada is the second phase of Dhamma. When you put your teaching into cultivation, it's called Patipada. Then Majjhima is the middle length, the middle way. To persuade his disciple to give heed to his new path. He spoke of his various blessings. Unlike the two diametrically opposite extremes, the middle path produces spiritual insight and intellectual wisdom to see things as they truly are. When the insight are clarified and the intellect is sharpened, everything is seen in its true perspective. So these two extremes is very, very detrimental to practice. So if you want to strive correctly, you have to strive to avoid the two extremes and take the middle path. Furthermore, unlike the first extreme, which stimulates passion, the middle way leads to the subjugation of passion, which results in peace. Above all, it leads to the attainment of the four supramundane path of sainthood, means the sainthood way, to the understanding of the Four Noble Truths, and finally to the realization of the ultimate goal, Nibbana. Now, what is the middle way? The Buddha replied, it is the Noble Eightfold Path. The eight factors are then enumerated in the discourse. The first factor is right understanding or right view, the keynote of Buddhism. The Buddha started with right view in order to clear the doubt of the monk and guide them on the right way. Right view or right understanding deals with the knowledge of oneself as one really is. It leads to right thought of non-attachment or renunciation, nikkhama, sankappa, loving kindness, the various Pali name, and harmlessness, which are opposed to selfishness, ill will, and cruelty, respectively. Right thought results in right speech, right action, and right livelihood or right living, which three factors perfect one's morality. The sixth factor is right effort, which deals with the elimination of evil states and the development of good states in oneself. This self-purification is best done by a careful introspection, for which right mindfulness, the seventh factor, is essential. Effort combined with mindfulness is essential. Effort combined with mindfulness produces right samadhi. Here they define it using the wrong term and words. This use right concentration or one-pointedness of mind. This is wrong. This one you don't follow. Then they call this the last path factor, the eighth path factor. Again, they use a one-pointedness mind, resemble a polished mirror, where everything is clearly reflected with no distortion. This is not the correct interpretation. It is not one-pointedness. It is the unwavering and collected mind. And that is what samadhi is. That's why samadhi is a different word from jhana, from all those one-pointedness, concentration. So this particular term is seldom understood. So samadhi is a term that you need to develop your own understanding. It is a free mind that is collected and unwavering. And to have that mind is not easy. You must have stability or sati. Without the stability or sati, leading to the initial understanding of the essential teaching, you cannot develop samadhi. It's only after sati has stabilized, then it gives rise to the initial understanding of the essential Dhamma. Then this straightening of view will start to give rise to the understanding to avoid the two extremes, to transcend duality, so that your mind, every moment of sense experience, it will not stir, it will not react, it will not do the foolish thing that it used to do. And when you stir, react, you create mental hindrance because you don't understand. Then if your sati is not stable, it will not be collected and unwavering. So all these are the understanding leading to the development of samadhi in the midst of life. So samadhi in daily life is important. When you are mindful and have this state of samadhi, you can see things as they are. Because samadhi is initially needed for you to develop the direct seeing. Otherwise, at the moment of sense experience, if there is no stability, if your mind cannot be in a state of collectedness, stability, then it will stir, it will react. That's why the collected mind, the unwavering mind, is the mind that is in samadhi. But it's a free mind, it's not in concentration. It's not in a conditioned state. And that is a very important understanding. Otherwise, you may get yourself locked into energy field or jhana or concentration, which is a conditioned state. And within that concentration or conditioned state or absorption or one-pointedness, your mind also unwavering, also collected, because it's one-pointedness, it cannot move. All the thoughts are kept into one point. If you use that, then all the mental hindrances are suppressed. That's why you cannot see its movement. You cannot see its arising and passing away. You cannot insight into phenomena. Because all the mental hindrances are suppressed. It cannot arise. It's like you are enlightened. You are enlightened. But the true cultivation involves the free mind, where all the mental hindrance, all the mind state are not suppressed, so that it can arise in the midst of life, when you confront life, when you confront situation within the First Noble Truth reality that can lead to suffering, misery. It is for you to see all this. Then you can see clearly how the dependent origination arise and pass away. All of the mind state, the link, the 12 link. How from avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijnanam, vijnanam paccaya namarupam, and all those things leading to contact, feeling, condition, craving, craving, condition, grasping, grasping, condition, becoming, then comes birth. Then with birth arises the whole mess of suffering. And this is how you function as a human, how your mundane mind evolve and develop. Then through your wrong view, self-delusion, sakayaditti, ignorance, you stir your mind, you create attachment, craving, clinging, grasping, that leads to affliction or suffering. So this is all within the teaching. So this samadhi, that term has to be properly understood. So samadhi you need to cultivate. You need to cultivate it. Otherwise, it cannot arise. First, you need to have sati. Stabilize it to be ever mindful. Then after you stabilize, it has some form of stability. Then this sati, which has some form of stability, can allow you to reflect, contemplate, and develop some understanding of the essential Dhamma, giving rise to the initial wisdom based on the essential Dhamma that the Buddha has taught, like the five daily contemplation, the three evil roots and all those things. So you can be mindful of them. You can be aware of them. Then you can put them to test. Then you come to understand how the teaching comes about, how the Buddha, through the right view regards to the law of karma, come out with all the advice of avoiding all evil, the good, and purifying the mind. Then how, when he realized the dependent origination nature of the mind states, he can teach you to understand how you function as a human being and understand clearly who you are, what you are. That's how the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta and all this come out. Then later on, the Four Noble Truths in its three turning will give rise to all the three types of corresponding wisdom. And through this wisdom, you straighten your view. And as you straighten your view, you have less and less ignorant, less and less wrong view. And because of that, you think less. That's how your mind stabilizes. When you start to think less, you become more mindful, less thought, more aware. Then less thought, more aware, with the view straightened until you are no longer deluded, then samadhi naturally exists. Yeah? Whatever situation in life you come to confront, your mind can be at peace with it. Your mind can come to terms with those realities, can see things as they are, can accept them for what they are. That's why it's always at peace, at peace, at peace. And then, avijja paccaya sankhara weakened, accentuated, until most of the time you are peaceful, aware, silent, non-reactive. And that is sati leading to samadhi. Yeah. Then as you are in that state of sati and samadhi, then you can see things as they are. Then you maintain this constant awareness or mindfulness. Means you are ever mindful to cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, especially the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. Then one day, through this stability of sati and samadhi, you can insight into phenomena and awaken to the universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state and non-self, nature of all phenomena. And how it happens is, when your mindfulness is so stable, ever mindful, continuous, then you can be at the moment of arising of phenomena, is sustaining and is passing away. There and then, your mind, your awareness, your sati is continuous with it. Then when you continuously aware, then all of a sudden, one day, when the condition is fulfilled, there is an awakening. The silent mind just understands, or it just insight into that characteristic. Then, like I said, truth is everywhere. Why can't you see? The universal characteristic of impermanent, suffering state, and non-self. These are the truth. It's everywhere, within nature, within life, within existence. Why can't you see? For those who see, they always see. Yeah. That's the reason why the enlightened one can tell you, truth is everywhere, in the midst of life and existence. Why can't you see? For those who see, they always see. So this is what samadhi is all about. Sati leading to samadhi. Okay, we go on. Prefacing the discourse with the two extremes and his newly discovered middle way, the Buddha expounded the Four Noble Truths in detail. This is where the three turning come about. You read the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, you will come to understand. I need to get hold of my reading glass. This word is making my eyesight not so good. You just give me a minute.
continue. Huh? Satya is the Pali term for truth, which means what is or that which is. Its Sanskrit equivalent is should be Satya. Huh? Or Satya. Satya, they pronounce it differently. Which denote and in control. Incontrovertible fact. The Buddha how to pronounce this word? Yunanshet. What is the meaning of Yunanshet? Announce. Okay. The Buddha enunciated four such truths, the foundation of his teaching, which are associated with the so-called being, the human being. Hence, his doctrine is homocentric, opposed to the theocentric religion. It is introvert and non-extrovert. Whether the Buddha arises or not, this truth exists. And it is a Buddha that reveals them to the deluded world. They do not and cannot change with time because they are eternal truth. The Buddha was not in debt to anyone for his realization of them, as he himself remarked in the discourse thus. With regards to things unheard before, there arose in me the eye, the knowledge, the vision, the wisdom, the insight, and the light. These words are very significant because they testify to the originality of his own new teaching. Hence, there is no justification in the statement that Buddhism is a natural outgrowth of Hinduism, although it is true that there are some fundamental doctrine common to both systems. These truths are in Pali term Arya Satyani. They are so called because they were discovered by the greatest Arya, that is one who is far removed from passion. The first noble truth deals with suffering, dukkha, which for need of a better English equivalent word is inappropriately rendered by suffering or sorrow. As a feeling, dukkha means that which is difficult to endure. As an abstract truth, dukkha is used in a sense of contemptible emptiness. The word rests on suffering, hence it is contemptible. It is devoid of any reality, hence it is empty or void. Dukkha, therefore, means contemptible void. Average men are only surface seer, and Arya see things as they truly are. To an Arya, all life is suffering, and he finds no real happiness in this world, which deceives mankind with illusion, with illusionary pleasure. Material happiness is merely the gratification of some desire. All are subject to birth and consequently to decay, disease, and finally to death. That's why it's called jati, jara. Disease is called vadi. And finally, marana. Marana is death. That's why marana nusati, contemplation on death. No one is exempted from these four causes of suffering. Actually, it should be the reality of birth and death. Wish unfulfilled is also suffering. As a rule, one does not wish to be associated with things or person that one don't like, or does not wish to be separated from things or person that one likes. One's cherished desire are not, however, always gratified. At times, what one least expects or what one least desire is thrust on oneself. Such unexpected, unpleasant circumstances become so intolerable and painful that weak, ignorant person are compelled to commit suicide, as if such an act would solve the problem. Real happiness is found within, and is not to be defined in terms of wealth, power, honor, and conquest. If such worldly possessions are forcibly or unjustly obtained, or are misdirected, or even viewed with attachment, they become a source of pain and sorrow for the possessor. Normally, the enjoyment of sensual pleasure is the highest, and only happiness of the average person. There is no doubt some momentary happiness in the anticipation, gratification, and retrospection of such fleeting material pleasure, but they are illusionary and temporary. According to the Buddha, non-attachment, viragata, or the transcending of material pleasure, is the greatest bliss. In brief, this composite body, panchupadana kanda, actually should be upadana kanda, pancha upadana kanda, itself is the cause of suffering. The five aggregates of grasping is the cause of suffering. Then he went on to teach, there are three kinds of craving. The first is the grossest form of craving, which is simple attachment to sensual pleasure. They call sensual craving, or kama tangha. The second is attachment to existence, bhava tangha. The actual word should be craving for existence, or craving to be. Then the third craving is craving for non-existence, or not to be. According to the commentaries, the last two kinds of craving are attachment to sensual desire connected with the belief of eternalism, and that which is connected with the belief of nihilism, bhava tanha, may also be interpreted as attachment to the realm of form, and attachment to the formless realm. Since ruparaga and aruparaga are treated as two of the fetters, there are 10 fetters that bind living being to the world. So this 10 fetter is described by the Buddha. The first five, they are related to the first stage of sainthood and the second stage of sainthood. So the first three fetters, when you develop the first stage of sainthood, it will be severed. The first three, I think you are familiar by now. What is the first fetter that you will sever in order to become enlightened? What is the first fetter? Sakayadity, very good. Self-delusion. Then second fetter is what? The belief in right and ritual, no more. Belief in right and ritual is a fetter. It is like you have this, what they call, deluded mind. You don't want to find out and investigate into truth. You become like gullible. So you tend to believe what people tell you based on logic or whatever. So all the tradition, the rite and ritual that people believe in without any understanding behind, like they say, after you die, you will go to hell, you will become hungry ghost, or after your parent die, you don't do all the filial piety, burn all the paper house, they will come and haunt you, and all this thing. Then sometimes a lot of custom, tradition, you must put for how many days, otherwise you are not filial piety. Then you must do this and do that. Now then on the first 7 day you must do what, second 7 you must do what. So all these are rite and ritual. Then you believe. Then the pantang, all your pantang also same. What day cannot go out? The month of the ghost festival, like now. Cannot go out, got ghost, more dangerous. So all these are rite and ritual. It will go. The moment you break sakayadity, you will know there is no such thing. All these are within the what they call deluded world's perception. Because that form of mind is not you, understand? The consciousness that is left behind is also not the real you. These are random of consciousness. They exist, but they are within the conditioned world. And this is not important. You do what you have to do when you are alive. Then after that, you do your duty according to Therokuda Sutta. Karma is the basis behind existence. After your parent pass away, there is nothing you can do because they are not around to perform the good deeds. So what you can do is, according to the Buddha, the Therokuda Sutta describes it very well. He said, no amount of sorrow and lamentation or mourning can bring back the dead. Then do all the foolish things, burn all these paper things and hoping for them to have good life. Cannot. You can only do things that can bring forth the causes and conditions for you to develop the merits. That's why you make offering in their name. You offer to virtuous being, charitable organization, do all the wholesome deeds. Then you share this merit with them, transfer this merit with them. And they can only receive it if they are in the petarain. Understand? That's why transfer merit is only limited to petarain. But when you dedicate merits, make aspiration for causes and condition for them to have better life, or better rebirth and other things, all these are possible. Well, you invoke the power of merits and you invoke your fellow piety, devotion and all these things. Okay, then we move on. So the fetters, the third fetters I haven't finished. The third one is the faith in the triple gem become unshakable. You will have no more doubt. You know the Four Noble Truths is so powerful and the triple gem is real. This first three factor, once you severe, you will have to work on the next two. The next two is sensual desire and ill will. When you realize the second stage of sainthood, Sakadagami, during that stage, you have only attenuated both this fourth and fifth factors of sensual desire and ill will. Means you still have sensual desire, you still have ill will, but attenuated already, very much less already. Not until you realize anagami, third stage of sainthood, and then you sever the fourth and fifth factor. Means no more sensual desire, no more what they call ill will. Technically, there is no more craving, strong craving and anger or emotion within them. Even envy, jealousy, no more. But they still have five more fetters that they have to clear. And what are these five? The sixth one is just now mentioned here. Rupa Raga. Attachment to form existence, jhanas, the Brahma world. Then the arupa raga, attachment to the formless rhyme, the formless world or existence. So this one is still an attachment. Then after that you have the number eight. Number eight is they call minor conceit. The Pali word is called, what is the Pali word? Amana. Yes, thank you, it's Amana. Minor conceit. Means, you know that this fellow is not you. But you can still have that thought, no? The thought that you are an anagami or sakadagami and arya. The putujana not enlightened yet. This is very, very minor, slight conceit. Actually, deep inside they know non-self or the other thing. But there is still this thought that has this idea of minor conceit. You still think you are better than people. Then the ninth fetter is very difficult to break. You know what is that? The ninth one. Restlessness of mind. This restlessness of mind is very difficult to break. For no reason, your mind can still become restless. Sometimes it comes and tests you. Even very famous monk, you go and read the book on Straight from the Heart by Ajahn Mahabua. He written there many times. He cannot test it by this restlessness. He said he can train his mind until it has become so beautiful, you know, so bright, so luminous, you know, so calm, so still. His sati is throughout the day. You know, he has a lot of, initially he has a lot of jhana. He has this samadhi, means the absorption, continuous mindfulness, and also jhana, one-pointedness jhana. So his mind become like very, very serene, very powerful, luminous. Then like he's enlightened. Then for no reason, after a while, a few months or what, it become like wow. He completely got no way of managing it, not to say control it. Then he go back to Buddha, cannot work. He go back to develop all the so-called jhana, cannot work. That's why finally he came to the understanding, nothing free except wisdom. He reverted back to daily mindfulness. Go back to the four foundations of mindfulness and the daily mindfulness. That's how he finally break free. Then later on when Meiji Kiao approach him and learn under him, Meiji Kiao like to go into the jhana thing. Go and visit all the hell rhyme. Heavenly right, go everywhere. Ajahn Mahabua actually reprimanded her and tell her to leave. If you continue to do this, I'm not going to let you stay here. That's why he left. She left. Then later she realized her fault because she did a lot of this psychic thing as a cultivator. So this restlessness of mind is not easy. Not until your daily mindfulness, your free mind, develop the wisdom, the understanding, then that mind, for no reason, cannot develop all these things anymore because it has rooted out ignorance. Not until ignorance is rooted out, restlessness will be there. So ignorance is way beyond delusion. Delusion is only a very small part of avijja. Sakayatiti, self-delusion. That's why the 10 fetters that chain or bind the living being to the samsaric world, they are very powerful. So you need to break free. So now we continue. This craving is a powerful mental state latent in all and is the chief cause of most of the ills in life. It is this craving, gross or subtle, that leads to repeated birth in samsara, and that which makes one cling to all forms of life. That's the reason why after his enlightenment, the Buddha uttered the first verse, house builder, I have seen thee. You have been exposed, you shall build no more house. That's how he came to the enlightenment and he realized that craving is the cause of suffering, cause of repeated birth. Because of craving, there is desire. Craving for the sensual mind or sensual craving, then craving to come back to be. Then the other one is annihilation, craving not to be. But because of that wrong view, again it's a craving. You still have to come back. The grossest form of craving are attenuated on attaining Sakadagami. Ah, there is stated here. The second stage of sainthood, and are eradicated at Anagami, the third stage of sainthood. The subtle form of craving are eradicated on attaining arahantship. This is the minor conceit, attachment to form and formless jhana. Then finally, restlessness of mind. Then, page 85, paragraph 2. Right understanding of the first noble truth leading to the eradication of craving, the second noble truth, thus deal with the mental attitude of the ordinary man towards the external object of sense. The third noble truth is that there is a complete cessation of suffering, which is Nibbana, the ultimate goal of all Buddhist practitioners. It can be achieved in this life itself by the total eradication of all form of craving. This Nibbana is to be realized. The word is realized, not comprehended. By the mental eye, by renouncing all attachment to the external world. So this one, Nibbana, is to be realized, which is the second turning of the third noble truth. The first truth of suffering, which depends on this so-called being and various aspects of life, is to be carefully perceived, analyzed, and examined. Here they use the word perceive. The correct word should be to be understood. This examination leading to a proper understanding of oneself as one really is. The cause of suffering is craving or attachment, which is the second noble truth. The Dhammapada states, from craving spring grief. Now, this is a very important saying. From craving spring grief. From craving spring fear. For him who is without, wholly free from craving, there is no grief, much less fear. So this is a Dhammapada saying. So without craving, you are completely free. That's why craving is attachment, clinging, grasping, giving meaning, holding on to things, wanting things your way. That's the reason why from craving springs grief. Then from craving, it also gives rise to fear. So all of your suffering, sorrow, lamentation, fear, worry, anxiety, born of the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, they come from craving. Craving, the Buddha say, leads to repeated birth. This Pali term is very noteworthy, as there are many scholars who state that the Buddha did not teach the doctrine of rebirth. The second truth indirectly deals with the past, present, and future birth. This third noble truth has to be realized, now they use the correct word, by developing the Noble Eightfold Path, cultivation. This unique path is the only straight path to realize Nibbana, and this is the fourth noble truth. That's the reason why I always say the Noble Eightfold Path is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Otherwise, you cannot become enlightened. We are under the fourth noble truth. The Buddha mentioned clearly, if you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering, the realization of Nibbana, the enlightenment in the here and the now. Expounding the fourth truth in various ways, the Buddha concludes the discourse with the forcible words. This is the one that I always share with you, under Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. The Buddha himself to be said, as long, O Bhikkhu, as the absolute truth, intuitive wisdom regarding the four truths, under its three turning or three aspects and 12 modes, was not perfectly clear to me, so long I did not acknowledge that I have gained the incomparable supreme enlightenment. When the absolute truth, intuitive wisdom regarding the four truths, became perfectly clear to me, then only did I acknowledge that I have gained the incomparable supreme enlightenment, means Anuttara Samyat Sambohi. And there arose in me the knowledge and insight. Unshakable is the deliverance of my mind. This is my last birth. And now there is no more. Here he used the word existence again. No more becoming again. At the end of the discourse, Kondanya, the senior of the five disciples, understood the Dhamma and attained the first stage of sainthood. Realized that whatever is subject to origination, all that is subject to cessation. See, just this statement. Can you contemplate and reflect and see whether you can become a Sotapanna or not? Really? When you understand this statement, this sentence, you can become a Sotapanna. Want to try? Okay, read it out loud. Whatever is... read. Whatever is subject... Can you understand? Whatever, the Buddha put in another word actually. Whatever is of the nature to arise, is of the nature to... this one easier, isn't it? So, first stage of sainthood already. Really? I'm not joking. When you understand that the universal characteristic is like that, you will awaken. Now let's do it on the whiteboard. Okay. Read out to me. Whatever is... of the nature to arise is. So what do you understand from that? That should awaken you. That should point out to you that everything is impermanent, dependent originating, condition arising. Okay, now write down. My drink also about to fall. Whatever is of the nature to arise. Whatever that is of the nature to arise. Is of the nature to cease. Just like the Buddha, later on when he taught the monk, he also used a few other similar words that they Ingbi found the sutta that I mentioned. Last time I heard it from Ramanda. Imas means sati idang hoti. Imas means asati idang na hoti. Means when this arises, that arises. When this ceases, that ceases. Means what? Everything is dependent originating. That's the reason why the Buddha said whatever that is of the nature to arise. Means there are causes and conditions behind. Understand? That's how Asajji become enlightened. Sariputta becomes enlightened. Well, Asajji just told him, my teacher taught me this. He said, He said, whatever that arise in this world, there are causes and conditions behind. You remember? Asaji told him. And these causes and conditions, my teacher has explained. He straight away becomes Sotapan. This statement also same. So whatever that happened in this world, based on what Asaji say, yeah, which is the Buddha's word, which is similar to this, the Buddha said there are causes and conditions behind. Can you understand? Like how you come to this world. There are causes and conditions behind that. That because you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. You are what you are because of your karma. So if you look at yourself now, you will know whatever that happened to you is due to your karma, understand or not? And that is the causes and conditions behind. That's why the law of karma is very powerful. Because we are born of it, heir to it, conditioned and supported by it. And we are what we are because of it. And here is exactly the same, except it's a summarized sentence. Whatever that is of the nature to arise, means what? There are causes and conditions behind, understand? And mainly is karma. And because this one arise, it is also of the nature to cease. Because dependent on condition, it arises. When condition ceases, it ceases. That's the reason why the Buddha said, imas means sati idang hoti. When this arises, that arises. When this ceases, that ceases. When I create duality good, then automatically whatever that is not good, the opposite, bad, arises. Understand? That's a Lao Tzu, yin yang. Everything is yam yong, yin and yang. The duality exists in nature. Then when this ceases, when I don't create good or bad, naturally the duality, the opposite also ceases. And this is what self-delusion is all about. Means there is nothing in this world that is a permanent, unchanging entity. Do you understand? Where everything is dependent originating. So whatever that is of the nature to arise means there are causes and conditions. That's why it is of the nature to cease. Yeah, when the condition ceases, it will cease. Like your life force. You're this human form. How do you arise? Through karma, karmically conditional. Your karma creates the condition for you to come. You must have craving. Unless you are a bodhisattva, you come with a pure mind. Love and compassion, then the vow, then it's different. Otherwise, there must be rebirth consciousness, born of ignorant craving. Then that one is the first rebirth consciousness. After the death consciousness, the rebirth consciousness takes place. Then law of karma create the form and mind. The form and mind together with this so-called life force or karmic force that support it, animate the human being into a human form. And this one is the segmented life that come and take rebirth. And since this one, whatever is of the nature to arise is of the nature to cease, means when the condition supporting it is no more, it will cease. Do you understand? When the consciousness separate from the form, your whole entity gone, no more. Sometimes the consciousness need not go. The vital element or organ of your physical body destroyed, gone. It cannot support the consciousness. Then again, you say death has occurred. Means there is this ultimate separation. There's the condition that supported it no more. Then sometimes the life force, destructive karma come. There is no more life force. There is no more karmic force to pump the heart. The heart stop. When the heart stop, the blood cannot flow to your vital organ. Your brain dead, everything dead. That's how consciousness have to live. So through this, you will understand straight away self-delusion, severe. Then you realize this is not you. That's how you awaken. That's the reason why during the early day I used to share with most of the Kayanata. Even this nature of mind that come, if I heard this during the early day, I would have also awakened. It's very easy. But this is the secret. This is the truth that you need to understand. Because ours is a conditioned world. Conditioned arising world. That's the reason why the Buddha said our mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. When mind arises, everything arises. So you have to go back to mind. Can follow. And this is the one that creates illusion in you. And mind, you have to break it down to the four aggregates of feeling, perception, sankhara, and consciousness. Then together with the physical form and the mental form, that perception take in, the five aggregate of form and mind that constantly arise and pass away, you must have mindfulness to see them in the meditation and realize that they are all empty, impermanent, leading to suffering, therefore non-self, empty. They follow this law of dependent origination, paticca-samuppada. That's the reason why you meditate. If you have gone through that mindfulness and saw all those five aggregates, then the moment this statement come out, you straight away awaken. Yeah. You will understand. Clear? Ah, good. If it's clear, then very good. Any question? Oh, another 5 minutes. Wow, so fast, eh? Okay, I better finish off this one. Yeah? If you got any question, you just have to raise your hand. Huh? The mind is there. Yeah? When the Buddha expounded the discourse on Dhammacakkappavattana, the earthbound deities exclaimed, "This excellent Dhammacakka, which could not be expounded by any ascetic, priest, god, Mara, or Brahma of this world, has been expounded by the Exalted One at the Deerpark in Isipatana, near Benares. Hearing this, Devas and Brahmas of all the other planes also raised their same joyous cry." Under Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, do you know what happened after he proclaimed that first sermon? It was mentioned in the Sutta, you know, one by one, the Deva Rama, as you go out until the highest Brahma Rama, and the formless Rama, they really rejoice. And when they rejoice, this nature's occurrences of phenomena, it seems those who can hear the pitch, it was like thunder applause, very, very loud, that type of joy. So here they mention, hearing this, Devas and Brahmas of all the other planes also raise the same joyous cry. See? Oh, it's like you go and see a World Cup football match. Oh, goal that time, everybody. Oh, goal! So this one is really ecstasy. Then a radiant light surpassed the effulgence of the gods appear in the world. The light of Dhamma illuminated the whole world and bring peace and happiness to all beings. So this is the joy. Oh, finish already. Oh, good. Good timing. So we stop at this one. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then if you want to read the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, you can read from page 88 onward. 88 onward, yeah. This sutta is quite long, which is very beautiful. I think I have given you all under the first book, I think, A4 size. So you can go back and read on this. Okay, next week we have to nominate either one or two person. Who wants to be the volunteer? Next week is quite easy. Go through this Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. You can read according to what is written here. Then if you have time, you can continue with Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. Then see everybody become arahant. Like the five ascetic. You got enough time to prepare yourself. Okay. Can we have volunteer next Tuesday? Me? Can you no problem? Oh, don't worry. Your mom will help you. Queenie will help you. No need to be good. Just do whatever research, then come and share. Then we will discuss it. Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta now quite clear already, quite easy already. No, this is the sutta itself. We didn't go through the whole sutta. I can give you the A4 size book. I think you all came later. Queenie and Mei Xiang didn't receive them. I will give you. You wait for me. No, they didn't read through the sutta. They mentioned about the teaching. They didn't go. This one is the full sutta. The full sutta. The first turning, second turning, third turning. I give you that one. It saves you a lot of time from doing research. You can Google a few things and add if you want to. But this one is quite complete. This was one of the very first A4 size printed note from my email compilation. I shared it with a lot of Buddhists all over the world. But at the end, the appendix A is Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. This one I have edited using the correct English word. So this one is better than the sutta itself. You can compare them, but the English word here is more accurate. I give it to you, Queenie. So next Tuesday, we will have Mei Xiang and the mom. So the perfect sadhu, the perfect mom and daughter combination. Okay? Sue, you don't have? I give you a copy, okay? No, I will give you her copy, don't worry. After we have our cake that time, I give her. I think all of you should have, but some of you maybe too long ago, you never keep. I still have some copies, don't worry. Okay, we will do the sharing of merits, just now I heard the alarm clock ring. Then after that, we can have our simple makan. Okay, let us recall to mind all of the wholesomeness that we have developed over the past 2 hours. or 2 to 3 hours of sharing and meditation. Then now we recall to mind and share this merits with all beings, starting with the devas.
Akasata cha bhumata devanaga mahindika tang anumoditva chirang rakkhantu loka sasana itta vata cha amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo imena punyang kamena ame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa adivana patiya sadhu.